we actually got established in our own place, and we were able to keep food on the table all around. Like, it was amazing.
38,000 Alaskan households rely on the federal food stamp program. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, December 16th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a woman from Bethel surprises the competition at a powerlifting contest in Germany.
It's really fun being an underdog. It's a lot of fun because nobody even looks twice at you or thinks twice about you.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Did you know the average cost of a DUI in Alaska is over $24,000? Well, each December, there's a spike in impaired driving-related accidents, so consider the real cost of driving impaired. It could result in a loss of your hard-earned money, your job, or worse, you could lose your life. The Alaska Highway Safety Office reminds you to drive sober or get pulled over. This message sponsored by the Alaska Highway Safety Office.
The legislature is likely to back out of its controversial and costly lease of new legislative offices in downtown Anchorage, according to a couple of Republican lawmakers. KTUU reports the Legislative Council will gather on Saturday for a vote inside the leased 4th Avenue building that for many has become a symbol of excessive government spending at a time when policymakers are grappling with a multi-billion dollar shortfall. Staying in the 6-story building, which reopened in January after extensive renovations, would cost the state $47.8 million over the next decade, according to a report commissioned by the council's current chair, Senator Gary Stevens, a Republican from Kodiak. A decision to enter into a 10-year lease agreement with developer Mark Pfeffer was brokered under Stevens' predecessor, Representative Mike Hawker, a Republican from Anchorage. The bill for occupying vacant space in the Atwood building over the same period of time in comparison is about $6.6 million, the report states. The council's hearing begins at 9 a.m. Saturday in the auditorium at the legislative offices. A portion of the meeting may be closed to the public. A bill poised to pass the U.S. Congress would require the FDA to produce labeling guidelines before it allows the sale of genetically engineered salmon. That's one policy rider Senator Lisa Murkowski says she fought for that's included in the package of year-end spending and tax bills. The FDA has already approved a genetically altered salmon for human consumption without a labeling requirement. Murkowski, in a written statement, says the measure would also require the FDA to adopt a program to inform consumers whether a salmon on the market is genetically engineered. Murkowski says a separate provision in the bill would prohibit the marketing of fish from foreign waters as Alaska pollock. An unrelated measure to end the crude oil export ban is included in the bill. It wouldn't directly affect North Slope oil since it is already exempt. But lifting the ban is one of the national goals Murkowski set when she became chair of the Senate Energy Committee at the beginning of the year. Congress is expected to pass the package this week. According to a new White House report, 38,000 Alaskan households receive benefits from the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP. Most people know SNAP by its original name, food stamps. Two-thirds of those households have children. Half of them are in deep poverty. The statistics go on and on, but is the program working? Most people say yes, though there are some hiccups. KSKA's Ann Hillman has more from the Urban Affairs Desk.
Tracy Peters didn't expect to be sitting in the Sullivan Arena waiting to pick up donated food and presents for Christmas as her preschooler ran up and down the stairs. She was working as a caregiver, but a month ago, her hours were cut and some of her clients passed away. Then...
So my husband's a lineman, and he recently lost his job, got laid off because of the weather. And so we weren't prepared for that because he was told he was going to have winter work and they laid him off.
Peters is applying for jobs, but in the meantime, she's also applying for SNAP. She says she's trying to keep her family healthy.
So many people eat a bunch of junk food when they could, you know, because they can't afford the healthy stuff. And so that's another reason I'm trying to apply is because right now we're eating a bunch of fattening foods. And I'm just hoping this could help us a little bit with the healthy choices instead.
The 24-page long application sits on Peter's lap. It asks for detailed information about income, assets, and medical histories for everyone in the household.
Well, this is actually a lot more steps than I thought it was. A little bit more difficult than I thought, but at least I brought paperwork to help me along.
Applicants have to submit a lot of paperwork, like pay stubs, tax forms, and rental agreements, and the paper application.
I know, it's 2016 almost, and we're paper.
That's Tammy Walker, the chief of field operations for the state's Department of Public Assistance. They administer the federally funded program. Walker says she knows some people think the process is cumbersome. Though many people apply and get benefits within a month or two, others have stories about waiting for hours at offices or never getting called back about their applications. Walker says part of the problem is relying on physical files of paperwork that are spread out to offices around the state.
The paper is killing us, and our commissioner knows it. They're very aware because they see the paper and they see the frustration from staff and from clients.
Walker says the department is trying to streamline the application and eventually go digital, like the Medicaid application, but it takes time. And relative to the Medicaid backlog, the food stamps program is doing very well. According to the Food Bank of Alaska, about 27% of people who qualify for the program don't apply. Some say it's not worth the effort if they only get about $18 per month. Benefits range widely. Others don't know that owning a house or a snow machine that's used for daily transportation does not disqualify you. Many of the people who do apply, like Brandy Strait, say SNAP has been a necessary lifeline. She lost her job and took over the care of her disabled brother and her four children. The household of seven is living on her fiancé's $12 per hour job. Strait says before getting benefits, they had to choose between rent and food.
But I do feel it could help better if they look at more of the medical needs that people have. But and because with diabetes, you have to go for more particular food. My brother has brain damage and several different seizures. And so there's special diets. And I can't really go to the diets he needs because then you're going more expensive. And so you have to very carefully pick what you pick.
David Patterson, his girlfriend, and their baby were homeless before they got on SNAP and received other benefits. He says the program helped him put aside enough money to find a place to rent.
We actually got established in our own place, and we were able to keep food on the table all around. Like, it was amazing.
Like 57% of the adults who receive SNAP benefits, Patterson is working. He says he's a commercial fisherman and tries to get other work in the off-season. But he uses SNAP when he needs it to make sure he can keep a roof over his and his child's head. From the Urban Affairs Desk, I'm Ann Hillman.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a new marine research center near Sitka with a front row seat to the wildlife action.
It just so happens that's happening right at the doorstep of our new center. You can literally look from the porch and watch sperm whales out there.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking a variety of tire chains from passenger vehicles to heavy equipment, on the web at arcticwirerope.com.
UAS School of Management offers Bachelor of Business Administration degree programs online where learning critical information, new technologies, and tools are part of the course. More at uas.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by UAS.
Budget cuts have already dramatically reduced Alaska Marine Highway sailings, and the recently released spending plan for the next fiscal year calls for more. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports on how the ferry system fares in the governor's budget.
State officials will soon release the final version of next summer's ferry schedule. A draft released in October lays up four of the system's 11 ships and further reduces sailings. And while there may be a few adjustments, officials say it will be largely unchanged. But Governor Bill Walker's budget doesn't make it any worse.
The schedule we're working on is in anticipation of what the governor's proposed budget for FY17 would be.
Marine Highway spokesman Jeremy Woodrow says the budget proposes spending just over $142 million on the ferries in the budget year starting in July. That's about 8% lower than this year and about 11% less than the previous year. But Woodrow says it's not as deep as it sounds. He says only about a third of the full $13 million cut impacts operations.
The rest of those reductions come from a difference of last year's budget being supplemented with excess fuel trigger money, plus a one-time appropriation to allow the Marine Highway System to continue to run its schedule that was printed the prior year.
Overall, the budget funds about 300 weeks of sailings by the remaining ferries. That's just shy of a 15% reduction. But that's just what the governor wants. It's probably not what the legislature will accept. Majority leaders have already said Walker should have proposed many more cuts across the operating budget.
Well, I'm afraid it's going to get a lot worse.
Juneau Senator Dennis Egan serves on his chamber's Transportation Committee, as well as the panel that recommends the ferry system's operating budget.
I know a lot of the legislators don't understand what the Alaska Marine Highway System does. They understand that it gets their cars down here for the session, and that's about all they understand.
Egan, a Democrat, worries about far deeper cuts to the system's budget and schedule. Sitka Senator Bert Stedman, who sits on the same two committees, says this year's cuts are already hurting the region's economy.
The cuts are pretty substantial to start with, and if the legislature, goes further, it's going to be even more detrimental.
Stedman, a Republican, worries about South Central and Interior Alaska's greater legislative power.
My concern is fairness within the Marine Highway and fairness across the state, that we don't single out a couple of regions that end up with disproportional reductions. Clearly, we haven't shut down any highways in the rail belt, and as far as I know, we have no plans on doing so.
Last year, majority lawmakers proposed deep cuts in the Marine Highway System. They included eliminating service to communities with road connections, which could have cut Haines, Skagway, Valdez, Whittier, and Homer. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Ed Schoenfeld.
Golden Valley Electric Association is favoring oil over natural gas to fuel large generators in North Pole. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, the move reduces the utility's role as an anchor tenant for the state-backed Interior Energy Project.
Golden Valley Electric Association plans to buy a little over half a billion cubic feet of natural gas a year when the Interior Energy Project comes online in late 2017. That's well short of a projected 2 BCF. Golden Valley President and CEO Corey Borgeson says the utility has instead opted to contract with local refiner PetroStar for naphtha to fuel large turbine generators in North Pole. Borgeson says over 10 years, naphtha comes in between $7 and $70 million cheaper than liquefied natural gas at projected prices.
The differential between the two, the savings from between LNG cheap, let's call it, is about $7 million range. LNG medium is about in the $30 million range, and LNG expensive is in about the $70 million range.
Golden Valley's board voted to approve the naphtha contract at a meeting Monday, despite requests from local leaders that they delay until the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority-led Interior Energy Project firms up a natural gas plan and price. Local ADA board member and former state legislator Gary Wilkin is disappointed with the utility's decision.
It was a surprise. It was, frankly, a blow to the stomach. I'm not particularly happy about it. I don't think the GVA fulfilled their obligation to be a community partner in this.
Golden Valley's purchase of IEP gas will be during the summer months, a focus that will balance out winter heating demand. But Wilkin maintains the lesser commitment will make it more difficult to meet a target gas price equivalent to $2 a gallon heating oil.
Would have certainly enhanced the possibilities of success and given us more confidence in the numbers as we move forward.
GVEA's Borgeson says the utility could not wait for the IEP plan to develop and needed to give PetroStar an answer on naphtha.
They needed to go forward. They're going to have to invest about $20 million of capital in order to develop the naphtha splitter that they need to do to make this fuel, and we had to make a commitment to PetroStar to go forward with this fuel.
Under the 12-year contract, PetroStar agrees to drop the price Golden Valley pays for naphtha as of January 1st, while it builds a new facility to produce a lighter blend of the fuel. Borgeson adds that the contract includes off-ramps, allowing increased future use of natural gas, and that Golden Valley's North Pole generators will be set up to burn both fuels. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Sitka is the fourth recipient of a statewide Clean Harbors certificate. Along with Homer, Seward, and Haines, Sitka's harbor system was recognized in October by the Alaska Clean Harbors Advisory Committee for meeting 88 best management practices. KCAW's Emily Kwong has more.
The Alaska Clean Harbors Checklist of Best Management Practices, or BMPs, is like eating your broccoli in the boating world. They're designed to prevent pollution, reduce waste, save costs, basically to encourage clean boating. And Sitka has won the equivalent of a Clean Plate Award. Brett Farrell, Assistant Director of the Marine Exchange of Alaska, came to Sitka's assembly meeting last Tuesday to recognize the harbor system.
Sitka is now a leader in Alaska for proactive pollution prevention practices. Your harbor department is not only complying with local, state, and federal regulations, but going above and beyond to provide services to harbor customers that make doing the right thing reasonable and attractive alternatives to often polluting activities that can constitute business as usual in many harbors.
Farrell then presented a certificate and a white flag emblazoned with three fishing boats moored in clear blue waters. Accepting the flag was Harbor Master Stan Eliason and Deputy Harbor Master Chuck Hackett. Eliason says that in order to qualify as an Alaska Clean Harbor, the Sitka Harbor system had to meet 100% of state and federal legal requirements and 80% of those BMPs. One of the biggest improvements is the installation of new signs spelling out proper waste disposal.
See a lot of signage throughout the harbor systems at all the gangways and stuff, basically telling people who to call if they see an oil spill, do's and don'ts and stuff like that. And we're going to have a pamphlet here at the office we give out to the general public, and it's just it kind of maps out where you can find our recyclables, waste bins, what to do with batteries, etc.
Eliason says all the public literature was paid for by the Alaska Clean Harbors Advisory Committee, which is run by volunteers across the state. There's representation from the Department of Environmental Conservation and the Sea Grant Marine Advisory Program. On the phone with KCAW, Eliason thanked Hackett and Maintenance Supervisor Ron Pratt for taking the lead on the project.
Yeah, we're quite happy. Move on to the next thing, I guess.
What is the next thing?
I'm waiting for it. You know, there's always a challenge out there, so.
Among them, Eliason says, is tracking down a flagpole. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Emily Kwong.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on Condor.com. Condor, born to fly. Did you know the average cost of a DUI in Alaska is over $24,000? Well, each December, there's a spike in impaired driving-related accidents, so consider the real cost of driving impaired. Could result in a loss of your hard-earned money, your job, or worse, you could lose your life. The Alaska Highway Safety Office reminds you to drive sober or get pulled over. This message sponsored by the Alaska Highway Safety Office.
The Interior Village of Beavers School will remain open despite a below-par student count this fall. The Yukon Flats Village School District lost state funding when a 10-student minimum wasn't met. But at a school board meeting Tuesday, Village First Chief Rhonda Pitka says a decision was made to continue operating the school at a reduced level at least through next May.
The school board voted to keep the Beavers School open for the remainder of the school year. There were a few positions that were cut. They cut instructional aides, food services, the Gwich'in language instructor, and I believe custodial services also.
Pitka says the eliminated positions were part-time. The Beaver School's only remaining staff member is a full-time teacher who works with students ranging from kindergarten all through high school. Pitka says the school's status will be re-evaluated, adding that the district plans to petition the state for another headcount after coming up short last fall.
There were three students who weren't in Beaver at that time. They are in Beaver now. So we're at 11 students right now.
She says two new kindergartners are expected to enroll next year, potentially taking the Beaver School to 13 kids, well above the required number for state funding. She says the school's annual operating budget is about $460,000, noting that heating and other costs are high in the remote Yukon Flats Village. A whale research foundation working in Southeast Alaska for the last 20 years is coming ashore. The Center for Coastal Conservation has acquired the former general store in Warm Springs Bay on eastern Baranof Island and has plans to expand its research programs beyond humpback whales. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
Don't picture a glass office building in Warm Springs or an Auk Bay laboratory or even a Sitka Sound Science Center. The Center for Coastal Conservation is ambitious but small.
Right now, it is primarily a single building sitting on this little plot of land there. But even that, we kind of have ideas of how it's going to expand in the next couple of years into multiple buildings and multiple opportunities for all sorts of groups to be there at the same time.
Andy Szabo is the director of the Alaska Whale Foundation, the parent organization of the Center for Coastal Conservation. He spent the last 15 summers in the area doing graduate research on whales, primarily out of a 50-foot wooden boat based in Petersburg. Szabo says the foundation has traded out the boat for a shoreside facility and wants to turn its attention towards other ecological sciences.
What we're hoping to do is start to expand our programs into a lot more terrestrial research, coastal research, marine research. We want to start doing some inventory projects and some monitoring programs and support some education efforts as well.
But whales will still be in the research picture. The center continues to provide logistical support for SeaSwap, the Sperm Whale Avoidance Project run by the University of Alaska, the Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association, and the Scripps Institution of Oceanography.
And it just so happens that's happening right at the doorstep of our new center. You can literally look from the porch and watch sperm whales out there depredating these longline fishermen's gear. There's also this growing issue of humpback whales depredating again, hatchery-reared salmon. Hidden Falls is 5 miles away from where we are. So those whales are moving past our little center there and going up and feeding on salmon in front of the hatchery. And there's a lot of interest in addressing those problems and other sea otters and so forth.
And with interest comes funding. Szabo says that in the past, the Alaska Whale Foundation didn't need to raise more than the money needed to keep one boat running for the summer. Those needs will grow if the center follows through on its plans for expansion. But Szabo believes the resources will be there.
A lot of tourists are coming through there. A lot of fishermen come through there. The Hidden Falls hatchery is nearby. There's a trolling fleet comes through, the longline fleet comes through. So it's a great place to connect with all sorts of the region stakeholders, but also just tourists that are coming up here.
Szabo says he has made friends in Warm Springs over the many years he's been doing research nearby, and he's sensitive to the community's character. Even if it puts up another structure or two, the Center for Coastal Conservation should remain inconspicuous in the boardwalk community of about 15 houses. Inconspicuous? Exciting.
Things are evolving organically, but they're expanding rapidly. Last year was the first year we actually took, we acquired the title to that facility. We'd been working in there, and since that time, it just seems like things are growing at a rapid pace. I think next year, next summer is going to be really big in terms of the number of people out there, projects we're doing, number of volunteers.
Szabo says the Center for Coastal Conservation will operate between the months of April and October in Warm Springs Bay. He has plans to open an office in Sitka for the rest of the year. Warm Springs, he says, is a little dark and lonely in the winter. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Last month, 25-year-old Alaskan Natalie Hansen placed fourth at an international powerlifting competition in Germany. KYUK's Lakeed Rashavis has the story.
Natalie Hansen loves a good underdog story, partly because she has one of her own.
It's really fun being an underdog. It's a lot of fun because nobody even looks twice at you or thinks twice about you.
Hansen, 25, is a powerlifter. She got her start in the sport 3 years ago. Last month, she participated in the IPF Open World Championships in Luxembourg, Germany, an annual international powerlifting competition.
There's a database online when a world championship is coming up, and it has all the participants listed, and there's a hyperlink on each person's name, and you click on their link, and then it goes to like their lifting history. Over like, you know, some people are like 20 years of lifting history. And my name wasn't even hyperlinked. Like you couldn't even click on it because I had no lifting history.
Hansen initially didn't get an invitation to compete. She had placed second in the qualifying event as an alternate. Then someone dropped out.
I had a feeling it was coming, but when it finally came, it was pretty surreal. Because I'm relatively new to the sport, I was the youngest on the team by several years. And so I just felt like a little fish in a huge ocean.
Hansen grew up in Bethel and began powerlifting after she moved to Anchorage for graduate school in 2012. Just a few years later, she set new records for the U.S. women's squat and lift in the sport, most recently in the 2015 Men's and Women's National Powerlifting Championship in Texas in May. In powerlifting, competitions are held year-round and focus on three skills: the squat, the deadlift, and the bench press. The athlete attempts each of these moves three times. Unlike weightlifting, there isn't a lot of emphasis on speed as much as there is weight and form. At times, Hansen has lifted more than 500 pounds and says it's pretty thrilling.
Part of what makes it so exhilarating and fun is that really it's scary too. And you know that it takes like 100% of your brain power to stay focused on what you're doing at that exact moment.
She says that mental focus is a hallmark of those who succeed in the sport. Hansen works out 5 days a week, works part-time, and is pursuing a master's in civil engineering at the University of Alaska, Anchorage. She plans to graduate next summer. She says her parents and older brother are a huge part of her support network. Kathy Hansen, her mom, says she was surprised when her daughter first told her she was joining the sport.
Well, I think like a lot of people, I said, what's powerlifting? You know, and I really had never heard of it, didn't know anything about it. And then I was amazed, why would anybody want to do that? Doesn't sound like very much fun.
But Kathy says as time went on, she understood the sport better. Hansen's parents have followed her competitions across the nation and even to her most recent one in Germany. Outside of Hansen's other obligations, she remotely coaches 17-year-old Bethel High School student Sophie Swope in powerlifting. Swope, now a senior, heard about Hansen her freshman year of high school. A few years later, she became interested in powerlifting after doing general weightlifting. She says Hansen encouraged her to compete in state competitions and offers feedback through social media.
Lately, we've actually just been sending our videos through text message or on Facebook.
Swope is now a two-time powerlifting state champion. With Hansen's next competition in March and her master's degree following soon after, she's unsure of what's next. But whether it's powerlifting or engineering or both, she's in no hurry to choose. Reporting in Bethel, I'm Lakedra Chavis.
That's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Austin Baird, Liz Ruskin and Ann Hillman in Anchorage, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Emily Kwong and Robert Woolsey in Sitka, and Lakedra Chavis in Bethel. I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Did you know the average cost of a DUI in Alaska is over $24,000? Well, each December, there's a spike in impaired driving-related accidents, so consider the real cost of driving impaired. Could result in a loss of your hard-earned money, your job, or worse, you could lose your life. The Alaska Highway Safety Office reminds you to drive sober or get pulled over. This message sponsored by the Alaska Highway Safety Office.
Alaska Pacific University delivers an affordable education and life-friendly schedules designed to support your personal and professional goals. Graduate with work-ready experience in the career field of your choice. Apply now for fall 2016 and find out more about APU's Promise Tuition Grant and other scholarships at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by APU.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.